is Jim Fetzer, just delighted to be guest hosting right here on the Power Hour with the Power Hour Nation. I'm discussing an amicus brief submitted to the Supreme Court of the United States in the case of the United States versus Zokar Serenov, where there's an attempt here to hold him responsible for murder in a case where he was a patsy, just as Lee Oswald turned out to have been a patsy, just as Sirhan Sirhan turned out to be a patsy, just as Mark David Chapman turned out to be a patsy. It's all outrageous and insulting because it implies collusion between both sides, both the prosecution and the defense, which for a certainty happened in Boston. There was massive evidence that it was not done by them, where what and that the whole thing was an orchestrated event. Here, what I want to do is to read part of the amicus brief so you'll see what is in the hands of the court. Both the prosecution and the defense have this brief in their hands. Listen, interest of these friends of the court. James Fetzer, Ph.D., Emeritus Professor of Philosophy at the University of Minnesota Duluth. Mary Maxwell, Ph.D., LLB, International Scholar in Law and Politics, previously working in Australia, now living in New Hampshire. And Cesar Barruja, M.D., naturalized citizen of the United States, born and educated in Paraguay, now resident in New York and practicing medicine in the United States over more than 40 years, have long studied and published concerning the prosecution of Zokar Serenov. In keeping with a solemn admonition of Rule 37.1 of the rules of this court, they believe that actual innocence of the accused is always relevant in any death penalty case, especially whereas in this cause, the proof of actual innocence is powerful and has been suppressed. Dr. Fetzer, Dr. Maxwell, and Dr. Barruja wish to reveal known exculpatory evidence, which otherwise might be overlooked by this court. They have each discovered moral and legal deficiencies in this prosecution, among others, that it is unfounded in probable cause, because critical evidence, which was or should have been transferred to counsel for the accused under Brady versus Maryland, 1963, was in any event widely known and proves decisively that Mr. Serenov did not, in fact, detonate a pressure cooker bomb in Boston on April 15, 2013, as he was accused. They believe that Mr. Serenov was trapped into conviction and sentence of death by major news media in an egregious abuse of the First Amendment and by lawyers on both sides who concealed unmistakable evidence, including four color photo exhibits, which clearly and plainly show, among other things, that Mr. Serenov did not carry a black backpack attributed to him in the indictment at or about the time of the explosions, but carried a white sack over his right shoulder. Mr. Serenov was therefore not guilty. Other suspects were never approached or interrogated by investigators. The evidence in question was never considered by the jury at trial or the presiding judge at sentencing during the proceedings before the United States District Court for Massachusetts. It remains obscured behind a facade of false confessions and false framing of issues in this case. Under the circumstances, these friends of the court believe that this prosecution amounts to an attempt at judicial murder in the sense given reference in Powell versus Alabama, 1932. However the phenomenon may be explained, history illustrates that any nation which practices judicial murder experiences major adverse consequences. Hence, the judicial murder of Joan of Arc led to loss of English conquests in France. The judicial murder of Charles I led to the loss of constitutional government in England. And so it is in countless cases for many countries over the ages. Dr. Fetzer, Dr. Maxwell, and Dr. Barugia fear that the attempted but not yet consummated judicial murder of Zohar Sarinov will lead to grave consequences for the United States, which they wish to mollify or prevent as patriotic Americans. They act in this case lest this court be misled. Such is their interest in this cause. The appendix, and there's more to all of this, includes the four color photographs. Exhibit one being one of the pressure cooker bombs that blew up. Number two, a sample of the pressure cooker that was allegedly used to create these bombs. Number three, a photograph of one of the backpacks that exploded, black nylon with a white square sewn on it. Fourth, a photograph of the two that were, photoshopped into the Boston Marathon, showing that Tamerlan wore a large baggy, yes, dark-colored backpack, but not at all the proportions of the one that exploded, and that Zohar wore a white or silver backpack, again, completely unlike the black nylon backpack that exploded. And when you look at the two side by side, there's just no doubt about it. Thus, if the backpacks don't match, you must acquit. He was not guilty. As before, in the case of 9/11, I have a book, which, of course, Amazon has banned. And nobody died in Boston either. State-sponsored terrorism with Hollywood special effects, which you can obtain at moonrockbooks.com. Don't let yourself be played. Now, we have all these efforts that were being undertaken by the initially by the Obama administration, which was responsible for bringing a Sandy Hook after Barack Obama had nullified the Smith-Mundt Act of 1948, where the Smith-Mundt Act of 1948 precluded the use of the same techniques of propaganda and disinformation within the United States, including staged events by means of the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012, just in time to bring us Sandy Hook. This, just to illustrate how much this was a Obama-Biden holder event, the mayor of Boston went on the air in a show, radio show called Greater Boston, in November of 2012. And he told the host of the show, who is Andy Rudy's daughter, how he was buddies with Joe Biden and how the vice president had confided in him that by January of 2013, gun control would be a done deal. Andy Rooney's daughter, of course, was absolutely stunned and asked what could possibly happen for legislation to pass so rapidly. The mayor would not say, but obviously he was alluding to Sandy Hook. And on January 16th, just a month and 2 days later, Barack Obama signed no less than 23 executive orders to constrain our access to weapons under the Second Amendment. Now we have a proliferation of Second Amendment sanctuary cities, counties, and states across the nation, which is completely appropriate, especially in the wake of the Democrats' effort to defund the police. Now, it's absolutely unbelievable that they would seek to do that, because it's obvious and predictable that if you defund the police, if you reduce the number of cops on the street, crime will surge. And of course, as a consequence, crime has surged. I believe that, in effect, the Democrats shot themselves in both feet by their defund the police movement. And we even have efforts now taking place where we have even Cal Thomas writing a column which appeared in the Wisconsin State Journal. Democrats blame GOP for defunding the police, which is about as ridiculous as it gets. Go back to last summer when BLM was conducting looting and rioting and arson all over the country, Minneapolis, Portland, Seattle, especially striking instances. The Democrats were all for it. All for it. You even had Kamala Harris out there rooting for it. Nancy Pelosi supporting it. Mad Maxine Waters wanting more, 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 more rioting, more looting, more defunding of the police. Completely insane, lunatic. Well, here we have a new report I want to share with you. Guns and Proportion. Data on violence from 2019 by Rob Morse. I want to put violence in perspective. Let's start with a common set of facts before we argue about their significance. I saw an infographic about firearms from 2013, and I wanted to update it. 2019 is the last year where I could find complete data from both the U.S. Department of Justice and the U.S. Center for Disease Control. I want to put those facts into perspective so we see the real picture. This is what I found. We had 39,707 deaths from firearms in 2019, over 61%. 24,380 were suicides. That means firearms were used to kill, used in 15,000 homicides, a death where one person kills another. Murder doesn't happen everywhere with equal frequency. More than half of the murders are concentrated in 2% of our counties. In contrast, more than half our counties won't have a murder at all. I find it interesting that many of these non-violent counties are typically considered to have high rates of gun ownership. We have laws against it, but criminals commit over a million violent crimes each year. We have over 23,000 firearm regulations, but criminals use a gun to commit murder over 12,000 times a year. Across the United States, that leaves us with all of 3,065 homicides with a gun that were not gang-related. For perspective, that's about the same number of people who die from asthma or obesity. Of those 3,000 deaths, 340 homicides were the justified use of lethal force by a police officer. 344 homicides were attributed to civilian gun owners using a gun in legally justified self-defense. There were a total of 438 accidental deaths involving a firearm. Of those accidental deaths, 248 resulted in the death of a child under 14 years of age. Unfortunately, we don't know the age of the person who pulled the trigger in these firearm accidents. Let's put those accidents into perspective. There were a total of 173,040 accidental deaths in the U.S. that year. Compared to all accidental deaths, about 1 in 400 is from a firearm, 395. Overdose deaths from drugs and narcotics are almost 70 times more common than fatal firearms accidents, 68.0%. Ordinary citizens use a gun for self-defense about 2 million times a year. I repeat, ordinary citizens use a gun for self-defense about 2 million times a year. Out of that number, over 100,000 sexual assaults are stopped by armed defenders, 140,000. Fortunately, those defenders seldom have to press a trigger to stop their assault. When they do have to fire their gun, most of their attackers survive being shot by a handgun. About 1 in 10 adults have their permits to legally carry a concealed firearm in public. The fraction ranges from zero in Hawaii to about 50% of adults in some rural counties in Pennsylvania. About 1 in 100 adults will use a firearm in self-defense each year, 97. These gun owners seldom press the trigger. We're about 8,000 times more likely to use a gun in self-defense than for that gun to accidentally kill a child. Firearm owners in the U.S. who have their concealed carry permits are law-abiding and nonviolent as any group we can find in any country. That would include me. All this paints a pretty clear picture. It tells me we need more honest citizens to get their carry permits. You might disagree, but now we can have that discussion. There is more we need to know to build a realistic picture of violence in the United States. For perspective, there were 462 murders in New York City last year, 348 murders in Chicago last year, 335 murders in Baltimore last year, 262 murders in St. Louis last year, and 239 murders in Los Angeles County last year. When combined, these five cities had a total of 1,646 murders in 2019. That is more than half of the non-gang homicides in the entire United States. I don't think we have a gun problem after looking at the numbers. We have a failed city problem, and the U.S. news media would never admit it. I think he's got it exactly right, 100% correct. My dear colleague, Dr. Ewan, who, like myself, is a retired university professor, on her blog, Fellowship of the Minds, superimposed a 2016 electoral college map over a 2014 murder distribution map. And guess what? The murders were concentrated in areas that are controlled by the Democrats. It's their absurd policies of gun control that are creating the problem. They established free fire zones where civilians are not allowed to conceal carry, so criminals know there's not going to be any interference by a nosy civilian to stop their shooting spree and commit murders galore. If you want an illustration, the prototype, just look at Chicago. Chicago has the most stringent gun control laws in the nation, but also the highest gun violence and murder rate in the United States. Think about it. Why is that the case? Because the Democrats don't understand that their policies are counterproductive, that they're promoting murders rather than reducing them, and where experts like John Lott, who has a brilliant book entitled War on Guns, you can find on Amazon, has documented how when guns go down, murder goes up. It sounds counterintuitive, but it's true worldwide. Gun ownership and homicide rates are inversely related. So the higher the gun ownership, the lower the homicide rate. I've looked at the demographics. I've looked at the maps. In North America, we have the highest gun ownership in the world. In the United States and Canada, Canada now has begun confiscating the weapons from its own citizens and is turning into some kind of petty tyranny. It's unbelievable in Canada. Highest gun ownership, lowest homicide rate. South America, say take Brazil. Low gun ownership, high homicide rate. Africa, low gun ownership, high homicide rate. Russia, low gun ownership, high homicide rate. Everything you've heard about guns is bullshit. The Democrat Party is trying to disarm the American people, and I'm very troubled by their ultimate motivation. It is not good, it's not positive, and it's not going to benefit the United States. Are we still there? Todd, are we still there? Yes. Excellent, excellent, excellent. Meanwhile, you heard on the radio, I mean, we're getting these reports on the radio about how, you know, there's a low vaccine rate, and those who are vaccinated are the ones who are most vulnerable to the so-called Delta variant. Well, don't let yourself be played. Those who are not vaccinated are far better off than those who are. Here we have Bobby Kennedy Jr., a truly admirable fellow, warning, don't take a COVID-19 vaccine under any circumstances. If you are even just considering being vaccinated, Bobby has a message for you. Don't do it. The nephew of former President JFK recently issued a public statement urging purple everywhere to avoid the jab at all costs because it contains an untested new technology known as mRNA, the long-term side effects of which are completely unknown. The mRNA directly alters genetic material of those who receive it, just like what happens when scientists genetically engineered GMO food crops like soybeans or corn to make them resistant to bugs or drought. This intervention can be compared to genetically modified foods, which are also very controversial. Unlike all other vaccines, the genetic damage of which is not necessarily permanent, mRNA genetic damage is irreversible and irreparable. Even though the media and politicians are currently trivializing the problem and even foolishly calling for a new type of vaccine to return to normality, this vaccination is problematic in terms of health, mortality, and ethics, but also in terms of genetic damage. They ought to be regarded as a crime against humanity, as opposed to older vaccines, many of which can be detoxified following injection. mRNA vaccines live on in perpetuity inside the body. The damage they cause, in other words, is forever. You will have to live with the consequences because you will no longer be able to be cured simply by removing toxins from the human body. Comparing the genetic damage to the types that cause Down syndrome or cystic fibrosis, mRNA is almost like a continuous vaccine engine that repeatedly vaccinates a person for the rest of his life. Because of this, there is no way to fix or cure any problems that arise. This is as serious as it gets. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, who's been all over this, has described these mRNA vaccines as perfectly designed killing machines. You want to avoid them at all costs. Check it out. Do research. I am not a medical doctor. I am a PhD. I do the research. I've been reporting on this every day for over a year, even including weekends for most of that time. We'll be right back.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Hi, this is Power Hour J. We've been spring cleaning at the Power Mall. We have an overstock of Grown by Nature supplements, and we'd like to offer you 25% off of select products. Hurry, the sale will only be available while supplies last. No code necessary to shop at thepowermall.com, or you can call J at 877-817-9829. That's thepowermall.com or 877-817-9829. Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829. Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, guest hosting here on the Power Hour. Great to be back with the Power Hour Nation. Now, what I'm about to report is one of the most disturbing stories I've ever encountered. It has to do with the California water crisis, which is manufactured by Jerry Brown and Gavin Newsom. You're not going to believe the horrors this represents. I have become convinced that there's an effort here to depopulate the world. It's part of the Great Reset. The agenda is ultimately to reduce the world's population from 8 billion to only 500 million. Think about it. It's breathtaking. That involves the extinction, the termination of 7.5 billion. Deagle.com, a website with very strong ties to Intel community and the elites, is projecting that the U.S. population will go from 330 million in 2020 to only 65 in 2025. Subtract 65 million from 330 and you get 265 million souls here in the United States are not going to be with us in 5 years. How is that possible? Well, face masks are one of the techniques they're using. The face masks are very, very bad. Even Tony the Rat Fauci, as I refer to him, who's going to go down as perhaps the greatest mass murderer in all of history, has recommended face masks knowing better because he and colleagues conducted research on the Spanish flu and discovered most of the tens of millions who died did not die from the flu, but from bacterial pneumonia infections, which are promoted by, guess what, wearing face masks. So not only are you recirculating oxygen to depleted air, which means you're going to kill brain cells, and as Bobby Jr. was observing, that's irrevocable, because unlike skin cells, brain cells do not regenerate. You're also putting strain on your cardiovascular system. So when I see footage of young girls playing soccer wearing face masks, it just causes me great grief. This is bad. Puts a strain on your cardiovascular system. In addition, then, we know promoting bacterial pneumonia, one of my dear friends, my closest friend here in Madison, is hospitalized right now because he developed pneumonia. And I discussed with him about his having worn face masks and taken the jab. And while he's in a state of denial, I guarantee you that's the explanation for why he's come down with pneumonia. We spoke earlier today, and it looks like he's going to survive, but many will not. That's the first stage. That's the slow kill. Then the vaccines are a much faster kill. And it turns out that there are tens of thousands of deaths. My estimate is that because the reporting system is so obscured, it gets such a tiny percentage. Hundreds of thousands have died from taking these mRNA vaccines. And it's an obscenity, because in the past, you would have the FDA or the CDC withdraw a vaccine if it had a minuscule portion of this number of deaths. But that's not going to be the ultimate mechanism for dropping the U.S. population from 330 million to merely 65 in 5 years. It's going to be starvation. They're going to restrict our food supply. And it looks as though Gavin Newsom is right in their pitching. Let me share this article with you from Global Research. The sinister agenda behind California water crisis, looming food supply catastrophe. The ingredients are many, but central is a severe drought in key growing states of the Dakotas and Southwest, including agriculture-intensive California. So far, Washington has done disturbingly little to address the crisis, and California Water Board officials have been making the crisis far worse by draining the state water reserves into the ocean. So far, the worst-hit farm state is North Dakota, which grows most of the nation's red spring wheat. In the upper Midwest, the northern plain states, and the prairie provinces of Canada, winter brought far too little snow following a 2020 exceedingly dry summer. The result is a drought from Manitoba to the northern plain states. This hits farmers in the region just 4 years after a flash drought in 2017 arrived without early warning and devastated the U.S. northern Great Plains region comprising Montana, North Dakota, South, and the adjacent Canadian prairies. As of May 27th, according to Adnan Ekuz, state climatologist, 93% of the state of North Dakota is in at least severe drought, 77% in extreme drought. Farm organizations predict unless the rainfall changes dramatically in the coming weeks, the harvest of wheat, widely used for pasta and flour, will be a disaster. The extreme dry conditions extend north of the Dakotas into Manitoba, another major grain and farming region, especially for wheat and corn. There, the lack of rainfall and warmer than normal temperatures threaten the harvest, though it's still early for those crops. North Dakota and the Plains region depend on snow and rainfall for its agricultural water. While not as severe, farm states Iowa and Illinois are suffering abnormally dry conditions, 64% Iowa, 27% for Illinois. About 55% of Minnesota is abnormally dry as of in May. Drought is measured on a scale from D1 abnormally dry through D3 severe drought to D4 exceptional drought. The severe dry conditions are not limited to North Dakota or other Midwest farm states, unfortunately. A second region of very severe drought extends from western Texas across New Mexico, Colorado, Arizona, Nevada, and deep into California. 20% of Texas is in severe drought, 12% extreme. 6% of the state is experiencing exceptional drought, the worst. New Mexico is undergoing 96% extreme drought, and of that, 47% exceptional. The situation in California is by far the most serious in its potential impact on the supply of agriculture products to the nation. There, irrigation and a sophisticated water storage system provide water for irrigation and urban use for the state during periodic dry seasons. Here, a far larger catastrophe is in the making. A cyclical drought season is combining with literally criminal state environmental politics to devastate agriculture in the nation's most important farm-producing state. It's part of a radical green agenda being advocated by Governor Gavin Newsom and fellow Democrats to dismantle traditional agriculture, as insane as that may sound. Few outside California realize the state most known for Silicon Valley and beautiful beaches is such a vital source of agricultural production. California's agriculture is the most important in the United States, leading the nation's production in over 77 different products, including dairy and a number of fruit and vegetable specialty crops. The state, for example, is the only producer of crops such as almonds, artichokes, persimmons, raisins, and walnuts. California grows a third of the country's vegetables, two-thirds of the country's fruits and nuts. And yes, you can find a lot of fruits and nuts in California. It leads all other states in farm income with 77,500 farms and ranches. It's also second in production of livestock behind Texas. And its dairy industry is California's leading commodity in cash receipts. In total, 43 million acres of the state's 100 million acres are devoted to agriculture. In short, what happens here is vital to the nation's food supply. The water supply in California is far the most serious in terms of consequences for the food supply. In a period when the U.S. faces major supply chain disruptions owing to absurd corona lockdowns combined with highly suspicious hacks of key infrastructure. On May 31st, the infrastructure of the world's largest meat processor, JBS SA, was hacked, forcing the shutdown of all its U.S. beef plants that supply almost a quarter of American beef. The green lobby is asserting, while presenting no factual evidence, that global warming, increased CO2, man-made emission, is causing the drought. An examination of the case has found no evidence. But the media repeats the narrative to advance the Green New Deal agenda with frightening statements as claiming that the drought is comparable to the worst mega drought since 800 CE. Let me just say, this whole idea of CO2 being a threat and causing global warming is completely absurd scientifically, factually, evidentially. CO2 is an ordinary exhaust product of breathing by living things. It is reprocessed into oxygen by trees and plants around the world. This is part of the life cycle. The Democrats are playing us on so many different grounds that it's completely baffling if you don't understand that there's a sinister agenda that's driving it. Here's more of what's going on. After 2011, California underwent a severe seven-year drought, which ended in 2019 as major rains filled California reservoir system to capacity. According to state water experts, the reservoirs held enough water to easily endure at least a five-year drought. Yet, 2 years later, the administration of Governor Newsom is declaring a new drought and threatening emergency measures. What his administration is not saying is that the state water board and relevant state water authorities have been deliberately letting water flow into the Pacific Ocean. Why? They say to save two endangered fish species that are all but extinct, one a rare type of salmon, the second a delta smelt, a tiny minnow-sized fish, some two-inch size, which has all but disappeared. In June 2019, Shasta Dam, holding the state's largest reservoir as a keystone of the huge Central Valley Project, was filled to 98% of capacity. Just 2 years later, in May 2021, Shasta Lake Reservoir held a mere 42% capacity, almost 60% down. Similarly, in June 2019, Oroville Dam, the second largest, held water at 98% of capacity, but by May 2021 was down to just 37%. Smaller reservoirs saw similar drops. Where has all the water gone? Allegedly to save these fish varieties. During just 14 days in May, according to Christy Diener, a California water expert and farmer, 90% of Bay Area Delta inflow went to sea. It's equal to a year's supply of water for a million people. Diener has been warning repeatedly in recent years that water is unnecessarily being let out to sea as the state faces a normal dry year, she asked. Should we be having water shortages at the start of our second dry year? No. Our reservoirs were designed to provide a steady 5-year supply for all users and were filled to the top in June of 2019. Back in 2008, at the demand of environmental groups such as NRDC, a California judge ordered the Central Valley Water Project send 50% of water reservoirs to the Pacific Ocean to save the endangered salmon variety, even though the NGO admitted no more than 1,000 salmon would likely be saved by the extreme measure. In the years 1998 to 2005, an estimated average of 49% of California managed water supply went to what is termed the environment, including feeding into streams and rivers to feed estuaries in the Bay Area Delta. Only 2% went directly to maintain agriculture water supplies. This past January, Felicia Marcus, the chair of the California State Water Resources Control Board, who oversaw the controversial water policy since 2018, left at the end of her term to become an attorney for the Natural Resources Defense Council, one of the most powerful green NGOs, with a reported $400 million in resources to wage legal battles to defend endangered species, such as the California salmon and the Delta smelt. Appointed by Governor Jerry Brown as chair of the State Water Board in 2018, Marcus is directly responsible for draining the reserves into the ocean after they filled in 2019 using the claim of protecting endangered species. In March of 2021, with Marcus as attorney, the NRDC requested the State Water Resource Control Board, Marcus headed until recently, take immediate action to address perceived threats to listed salmon in the Sacramento River watershed from the Central Valley Project. This, as the state is facing a new drought emergency. In 2020, Governor Gavin Newsom, a protege of Jerry Brown, signed Senate Bill 1, the California Environmental Public Health and Workers Defense Act, which would send billions of gallons of water out into the Pacific Ocean, ostensibly to save more fish. It was a cover for manufacturing the present water crisis and specifically attacking farming, as incredible as it may seem. Get this. The true agenda of the Newsom and previous Brown administrations is to radically undermine the highly productive California agriculture sector. Governor Newsom has now introduced an impressive-sounding $5.1 billion drought relief bill. In spite of its title, nothing will go to improve the state reservoir water available for cities and farms. Of the total, $500 million will be spent on incentives for farmers to repurpose their land, that is, to stop farming. Suggestions include wildlife habitat recreation or solar panels. Another $230 million will be used for wildlife corridors and fish passage projects to improve the ability of wildlife to migrate safely. Fish passage projects is a clever phrase for dam removal, destroying the nation's most effective network of reservoirs. Let me just observe, I was born in Pasadena, I grew up in California, and we learned about this massive engineering project to create the dams and reservoirs to maintain water stability for California and agriculture. The idea of dismantling this is outrageous beyond words. These are criminal activities being undertaken by Governor Newsom, promoted by Jerry Brown and other Democrats in California and even across the nation. This is despicable. Then the Newsom bill allocates $300 million for the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act implementation, a 2014 law from Jerry Brown amid the previous severe drought to prevent farmers, in effect, from securing water from drilling wells. The effect will be to drive more farmers off the land. Another $200 million will go to habitat restoration, supporting tidal wetland, floodplains, and multi-benefit flood risk reduction projects, a drought package with funding for floods. This is about recreating floodplains so that when they demolish the dams, the water has some place to go. The vast bulk of the $500 billion is slated to reimburse water customers from the previous 2011-2019 drought from higher water bills, a move no doubt in hope voters will look positively on Newsom as he faces likely voter recall in November. Just bear in mind, the outcome is going to depend on the machines. As Stalin observed, he cared not who cast the votes. He cared about who counted them. The systematic dismantling of one of the world's most productive agricultural regions, using the seductive mantra of environmental protection, fits into the larger agenda of the Davos Great Reset and its plans to radically transform world agriculture into what the UN Agenda 2030 calls sustainable agriculture. No more meat protein. The green argument is that cows are a major source of methane gas emissions through burps and farts. How ridiculous is that? How it affects global climate, no one has seriously proven. Instead, we should eat laboratory-made fake meat like the genetically manipulated Impossible Burger of Bill Gates and Google, or even worms. Yes. In January, the European Food Safety Agency approved mealworms, larvae of the darkling beetles, as the first novel food cleared for sale across the EU. So think about it. They want to deprive us of beef, of red meat, and have us eat worms. And Jerry Brown and Gavin Newsom are moving forward with the agenda aggressively and may turn California into a wasteland and promote mass starvation. Now, bear in mind, the Republicans back in 2000 had to steal the election in Florida in order to give us the administration of W. Bush and Dick Cheney so they could bring us 9/11 and the Patriot Act, which reorganized 35 agencies of the federal government, which heretofore had been independent and operating in competition in the accumulation of intelligence, which is by far the most effective way to gather intelligence. And then in 2020, the Democrats had to steal the election from Donald Trump in order to bring us this Green New Deal using the coronavirus and the jab to promote the depopulation agenda, where, by the way, women who have not been inoculated, have not been vaccinated, but have been in the company of those who have suffered miscarriages, double periods, even postmenopausal women, menstruating, prepubescent girls menstruating. I'm telling you that the effects here are horrific. It is my conjecture that those who are vaccinated are going to turn out to be the Typhoid Marys of our time. Meanwhile, USB drives were suspiciously stolen, transferred, or inserted into voting systems used in swing states in the 2020 election. Agents raid home in Maricopa County and voter data theft investigation confiscate 8 hard drives, 3 computers, and a bag of USB sticks. In the State Farm Arena in Fulton County, Georgia, we identified numerous activities where USBs were transferred suspiciously between election personnel. On October 1st, 2020, it was reported an election laptop and memory sticks were stolen in Pennsylvania. We reported a missing flash drive in Milwaukee. At the same time, the city recorded 120,000 votes, all for Joe Biden, on the morning of November 4th. An IT expert has obtained an audit of the Dominion voting system in California showing a high-level diagram, which is likely to how it was set up in other countries. It reveals there are laptops or workstations on-site that some workers can access and alter ballot images. Our expert stated, thinking about the USB drives, this is where election data, forged or fake images, could be inserted or changed. When a number of USBs go missing or lost, they ought to be replaced, but this didn't happen in the 2020 election. The whole scenario opened the door to manipulation of votes through the USBs before they were delivered to the location where they were to be counted. Now, think about what's going on across the country. Defunding the police, that's going to lead crime to soar. In California, Seattle, other places, we have a homeless problem. No one's doing anything about it. If they shorten the food supply, it's going to create chaos. I believe the intention here of the Democrats is to create anarchy, and then to deal with it, they're going to invite in the United Nations. I believe they're seeking to defund the police and confiscate our guns so that they can create a, by reimagining the police, a federal police force that could be served to implement unconstitutional actions like face and vaccine mandates or confiscating our weapons. As Dave Hodges observed years and years ago, during the 20th century, there were 19 democides involving the slaughter of whole societies by their governments, each of which was preceded by gun confiscation. We cannot allow America to become number 20. However disheartening you may find what I'm telling you now, the United States is no longer the country it was when I was growing up. We are being told, in effect, that freedom of speech is only to be exercised on behalf of the elite, on behalf of a certain point of view. Facebook now is even sending messages to users asking about potentially extremist friends. Well, those extremist friends are going to be people who question what happened in the 2020 election, whether it was legit, that makes you an extremist, or whether the 6th of January was on the up and up, because we have reports of the FBI having organized and infiltrated. We have another from James, the brother of John Sullivan, that his brother led 226 Antifa members dressed as Trump supporters into the Capitol, the objective of which was to disrupt the discussion and debate of evidence of voting theft. All of this had begun before Donald Trump had even finished speaking at the Ellipse, which did not occur until even 1/11. And if you're a Trump supporter, obviously, you're going to turn out to be an extremist. This is one of the reasons they pushed the January 6th narrative, even though the Senate declined to pursue it. Pelosi is going forward. She needs it politically to tarnish Trump. The Democrats are fearful he's going to rise again and clean their clock as he did in 2016 and 2020. This is your country, my friend. Think about it, and if you can, do something to fix it. We're in a mess.
All heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.